Big show midweek Wednesday, February 12th, 2020 on Connecticut Today. We took a look at the chance there might be a bizarre kind of vote at the state capitol regarding a truck-only toll bill. Our buddy Tony Wong joined us for that. And also in the 5 o'clock hour, a postmortem of what happened and what didn't happen the previous night at the New Hampshire Democratic presidential primary. From a gentleman who has to see people during the day, I guess, that now want to do something called a simultaneous vote or something. Tony Wong joins us, a Republican state senator from Fairfield. Tony, what in the heck is going on? I don't know whether you heard me. I read that and I said, what is this, schoolyard stuff? No, you go first. No, you go first. Come on, man.
Seriously, you cannot make this stuff up in your wildest dream, in my case, a nightmare, as a member of a institution
that has procedures, Tony. It's got rules. It's got tradition.
Well, it sounds like you said earlier a Groucho Marx routine. You go first. No, you go first. The only thing missing is the poke in the eye and the squeeze of the nose. It really is a remarkable turn of events where the esteemed and the prestige and the tradition of lawmaking dating back to 1639 in this great state, it has never happened that we're going to simultaneously debate an issue. It is legislatively impossible, if not physically impossible, but you know what? We're going to try because we don't trust each other, and there's such a uncertainty about the vote process. It really is. You can't make this stuff up. And you know, for me, Paul, as a member of an institution that respects the history and the order and the tradition in this organization is. It's never been done before. And when you bastardize the process, you have forever changed the tone and the tenor in which you conduct the business of the people. This is far more than any bill. We've passed bills that I liked or don't like, yes or no. But what you're messing with is a institution that is greater than any single one of us. And you're willing to play games with this. Here's the point. No wonder people don't trust government.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't even trust itself.
You know, Tony, the only thing I can think of, and Tony Wong is the guest, the only thing I can think of, Tony, is are they at a point now where they may realize that come the morning after the election in a few months, they may not have enough votes. Now, it doesn't mean they're going to, you know, lose the House, but are they worried, Tony, that if just because of all this stuff that we've been talking about, you and I and everyone else of like mind for a year, it's got to be, Tony, that they're at least maybe worried about losing the state Senate. Are they at a point now where, listen, we have to try anything because if we wait, you know, we might wake up the morning after election night and be stuck in an abyss here?
Well, you know, the biggest missing part in that whole analysis is this. Who are you representing? Are you representing the will of the people who say no? Or are you protecting or aspiring to protect an institution that is not representing the will of the people? It really is a simple answer. If you're worried about the people that elected you and don't want you to vote on tolls, don't want you to support on it, but you're scheming and strategizing how you can pass the vote and hope people forget, it is the ultimate insult to the democratic process. And I'm just, like I said, seriously, I mean, it really is an undermine. And for me, as a senator, and respectful of the history and the respect for the institution, once you go this way, there's no going back. The institution is better than and bigger than any single one of us. And I just worry that we're doing this. But it reinforces, Paul, bottom line. This is why people don't trust government.
Yeah.
They just don't trust that it's only going to be trucks, that it won't be cars, that it will not be used for filling up the general funds. It's a fundamental lack of trust. And here's another example why people don't trust government. You're trying to just squeeze something in, squeeze a round peg in a square hole just so you can get it done.
Yeah, Tony, you know, I've covered sports a long time in my career, and covered a lot of hockey and done play-by-play for hockey on and off for 10 or 15 years. And at least among the hockey community, they're of the four sports, Tony, I heard it most covering hockey. They said, listen, there's a line at certain things that players do and players don't, no matter how heated it gets on the ice. But the hockey players and coaches and families and fans always talk about a respect for the game. There's certain things you don't do when you're on the ice, when you're talking about the opposition team, you know, clean checks, a clean hard game. There are certain things you do to respect the game. And, you know, when I first saw what was going on with the simultaneous vote, I said, where's the respect for the game or the institution?
Without a doubt. And look, are there cheating in the sports? Yes, we have the Astros sign stealing. We have advantages that are taken. But history does not judge kindly on cheaters. History does not judge kindly on people who disrespect the tradition of the game and the process. And this is where we're going. We're going to be judged not only for passing something simultaneously that's never been done, perhaps against the will of the general public you cited earlier, but ultimately we're going to tarnish and really just bastardize the legislative process. Where can people trust anymore the legislative process of representation and lawmaking? It really has a far greater institutional significance than any one vote.
Yeah, and Tony, even people, as you say, that might not agree or disagree with any bill, at least in the end, you and I can say, we're able to say, okay, it was debated. There were some, you know, arm twisting here and there. That's politics. Things were debated, but it was done within the frame of the rules. Okay, to the victor go the spoils. We live with that. This just on the face doesn't pass the smell test on that.
It doesn't. And the fact is, we are now in the constitutional regular session. That in order to take on this bill, you should normally have more public hearings, more feedback from the public and testimonies. It seems like we're going to emergency certify this bill, so there is no more town halls, no more public hearings. We're going to go straight to a vote. Again, that's another example why people no longer trust the institution of government. This is one vote, one way or the other. Whether you're for or against, it's a vote. But bottom line, it seems like they're trying to tip the scales one way versus another. And again, it's beyond frustrating. Look, I can win, I can lose. But seriously, you really can't make this up in your wildest dreams.
Tony, thank you. We'll be in touch, and good luck over the next few days.
Stay tuned.
Tony, thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
Bye-bye. Feeling the burn last night during the during the coverage or not, my friend? How are you?
Good, Paul. How are you? I certainly wasn't feeling the burn, but I was feeling sorry for Joe Biden, that's for sure.
Boy, he got out of Dodge around midday yesterday, and I saw him when he got to South Carolina. God bless the guy. He's, you know, two terms as VP. He sounds like a tired, defeated guy.
Oh,
there.
He sounds like it. He looks like it. He's getting angry with people that are, you know, that interview him.
He's calling him names.
Names and so forth. And this really is not really, you know, what we expect of a so-called front runner. He is no longer the front runner in this contest.
Yeah, and listen, he had a distinguished career, two-term vice president. But Gary, as we have found out with Hillary Clinton, we found out with Tom Dewey, who was supposed to be the candidate from Central Casting. Some people are just not destined for the White House.
No, he really isn't, and it's becoming painfully clear. I think when you see him on the debate stage, I mean, this is his third time you know, contesting the nomination of his party. And, you know, the first time he was run out of the race as a result of a scandal, and then the second time he just didn't get any traction. And now we're in the third time. You know, Joe Biden, everybody, and it's interesting that he's leading in the national poll among Democrats, you know, but nevertheless, he has never ever won a primary or a caucus. And yet many people, you know, when this thing started, there was this notion that Joe Biden was sort of the inevitable candidate. And I know he's talking about, you know, turning things around in South Carolina, and it is possible there could be a reset of this race. But nevertheless, you know, if you expect to be the candidate of your party, you've got to do well in Iowa. You don't have to win, but you got to come within the top three, and you have to really place within the top two in New Hampshire. And he is so far out of contention in both of those key nominating states that you have to wonder just how much longer he's going to survive.
Yeah, and Gary, the other thing, you know, you and I was listening all over last night and today to all the pundits on terrestrial radio and satellite, too. One thing that I find interesting, they say, well, you know, Iowa really isn't, you know, representative of the Democratic base. And I say to that, well, okay, but if you're going to get the nomination, Gary, you've got to sell yourself to middle America and in
That's
New
right.
Hampshire to New England. So all this thing about, well, maybe Iowa shouldn't go first. I'm like, well, no. What are you going to make California go first? That's a no-brainer if you're a Democrat.
Oh, that would be devastating if California
yeah.
went first, because then it would be simply who had the most money to buy TV time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Iowa and certainly New Hampshire require candidates to engage in retail politics. They have to meet people face to face and really sell themselves, just as you said, Paul. And, you know, it doesn't matter if in fact Iowa was 90% Caucasian. You know, you have to, you, I mean, first of all, within the Democratic Party, there are more, you know, whites
yeah.
than there are other persons of color. And so to say that it's, well, it's just a white state, and so does it really matter? It does matter. And I know that the Democratic Party today has a very large percentage of African-Americans and Hispanics, but nevertheless, you have to sell yourself in Iowa and New Hampshire to really convince people that you've got the wherewithal to really conduct a strong grassroots campaign, and Joe Biden has not demonstrated that.
Dr. Gary Rose is the guest. Gary, hang on. We'll be right back to you. Traffic and weather together on the Sixes as we break down with one of the best minds around what happened, what didn't happen in New Hampshire last night. It's 5:36. Traffic and weather together on the Sixes right here at WICC. At 20 before 6, hope all has gone well for you on this midweek Wednesday, breaking down what happened, what maybe didn't happen last night in New Hampshire, the primary with one of our main go-to folks, Dr. Gary Rose, head of the Poli-Sci Department, Sacred Heart University. Gary, if somebody had come up to you 20 or 25 years ago and said, hey, you know what, did you watch the New Hampshire primary last night? Gary, can you believe a socialist is leading in the nation's first in the country primary on the Democratic Party side 20 years ago? You probably would have said that person was crazy.
Oh, absolutely. It's a statement about where the party has moved in the last several years,
mm-hmm.
and quite dramatically, too, to the far left end of the political spectrum. It is now, without a doubt, a party that is, I can't say it's dominated by socialists, but certainly there is a very strong socialist pull within that party, and it has demonstrated itself to be actually quite formidable with Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, even though I think her days are numbered, and it has pulled, I should add, even the so-called, and I'm very, you know, cautious about calling them moderates, but it has pulled, you know, even people like Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar and Biden even more in a liberal direction. They're not all the way over on the progressive wing, but clearly that is a very, as you mentioned, Paul, the socialist bloc, or if you want to call it the progressive bloc within that party, is really, it's got a lot of gravitas and force, and it's pulling candidates to the left increasingly.
If Bernie does well in South Carolina coming up and Nevada, he's obviously the polling in Nevada shows he's going to do very well, Gary. If he finishes first or maybe a strong second or a solid third in South Carolina, and he does well or wins Nevada, is that when the panic button gets hit, or has it already gone to yellow alert?
I think that the panic button has already hit, and
okay.
I think that's evident by allowing Michael Bloomberg to participate in the next debate, because they, I think many do feel, and I know the establishment feels, that Biden is really faltering and he's going down, and so they want to have a clear alternative to Bernie, at least a moderately liberal alternative. And yes, the panic button is already there, and the establishment, I think, is really quite frightened about what's going on, largely because when you look in the past, all you can think of is 1972 when they nominated McGovern, and of course Mondale in 84. The party simply, whenever they go far left, they don't win, and I know that the establishment is concerned about that. And then all of that talk, too, about letting super delegates possibly vote on the first ballot.
Oh.
I know that, as opposed to the second, you can really see that the panic's already there.
Well, I tell you, I don't know whether you saw the video last week with Iowa and this week. Boy, James Carville, have you seen him? I think with good reason, Gary. James Carville is like essentially 2 weeks in a row saying, what the hell are we doing here? No, I may not agree with his politics, but he's spot on this.
Absolutely. And he was saying, here we are talking about letting felons, vote and letting people out of jail cell to vote. He goes, what the heck is happening to this party? These are not electable issues. They do help individuals, perhaps win the nomination within that party. But the general electorate, the general electorate is not really out there on the far left wing of the political spectrum. It's really a Gallup poll will document this. It's much more of a center, actually slightly center right electorate, and this party is under. If in fact Bernie wins the nomination, and even if it's Buttigieg, if you really break Buttigieg's platform down, he is not really middle of the road Democrat. He's a liberal Democrat, and they are. I don't think they're really in sync, if you will, with the general electorate. I really don't.
Boy, I was trying on social media last night to explain to some friends of mine, Mike Bloomberg, what's the deal? I said, well, listen, I said, Bloomberg, his wealth is staggering. What's Trump worth, like $2 billion? Bloomberg's worth $61.5 billion.
Yeah,
so he's got all the money on the planet. But I said to this person who lived out west, I said, you have to understand, he was only mayor of New York. He kind of got in, Gary, which is no short trip. It's mayor of the greatest city of the world. But, he got in largely on Giuliani's coattails. He changed his affiliation three times. He had a muscle through that change, I explained, to get a third term. And the guy, it wasn't you, but it was some other pundit I had on here, Gary, you said, listen, he's a smart guy with his media empire, but he's an emotionless automaton that's got a boatload of money. And say what you will about Trump, he's got a sense of humor. He'll go toe-to-toe. So I don't know if Mike Bloomberg is the savior, Gary, everybody's making him out to be.
No, I don't think he is either. And I don't believe that his strategy of pouring all of his resources and waiting until March 3rd for Super Tuesday, in which we have 14 contests, their state contests, is in fact a very smart strategy at all. He's not gaining this big momentum that you see coming out of Iowa and New Hampshire, and which will come out of South Carolina and Nevada too. No, I don't think it's a good strategy. And I think people, when they see him up on stage debating, I think they're going to realize just how dull this guy truly is, because he's smart as a whip, but
he's just dull.
He's not an interesting fellow. And what is interesting, I read something a while back. I don't know if it's absolutely accurate, but I guess he's been hiring some people who are skilled in social media to make him look cool. Have you heard that?
Yes, I read the same story. And listen, Gary, say what you will about Donald Trump, and I know there are people in the audience now that despise him, but here's a guy, Gary, off the cuff, can go out in front of 18 or 20,000 people and keep them going for 90 minutes. I don't get it.
That's right. Oh, I know. That's right. Unscripted, and he really is a showman. He's an entertainer. and he knows how to certainly move crowds. You know, I can state emphatically, I went to one of those rallies here
really?
in my university when he was running, and yes, in August of 2016,
yeah.
He was actually on our campus, and I thought, you know, I'm going to go see what this is about.
This
and
guy's got no shot, right?
I've never seen anything like that. I've been to
how
some
was
rallies
the cra-
before.
How was the crowd when you saw him?
I've never seen a crowd more energized and more excited to see a candidate than I've seen.
Oh,
and you know, I go even farther back. I mean, I saw John Kennedy speak on the green in 1960 in New Haven.
Wow.
And I thought that was exciting. It was kind of a transformative experience
yeah.
for me. But you know, but I will say that it's even then I can remember it wasn't anything like what I saw
wow.
here on campus with Trump. Trump was just incredible, the things he was saying. People were laughing.
So you're telling me that if Jesus Christ came down from heaven, he would be the opening act for Donald Trump.
Yeah, he even was turning people against the press who were in the back there with their cameras, and people were, you know, making actually obscene gestures at the press as he was speaking. Which I didn't particularly like, but nevertheless, it was just I've never seen anything like this.
Gary, thank you. Appreciate it. We'll talk again in a couple of weeks. Thanks for your time. I really do appreciate
all right.
it. Thanks.
Well, okay.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
There you go. All right. Traffic and weather together. Imagine that. Opening for Donald Trump tonight is Jesus Christ himself.